This is Bobby Hardy with commercial news for Vermilion County for Friday, August 21st, 2020. We'll start with our first cover story. Low student count concerns District 118 out of Danville. Danville District 118 student registration for the new school year has been in full swing since last month, yet administrators are wondering where all the students are. Superintendent Alicia Gittes told the school board Wednesday night that only 3,470 students have registered either online or in person so far. Last year, the district's total enrollment was 5,804. That leaves more than 2,300 students unaccounted for, she said. As of Thursday night, 1,222 students in pre-kindergarten through 4th grade and 2,023 5th through 12th graders had registered. The parents of another 225 students had picked up registration packets but hadn't turned them in yet. "This is alarming," Gita said. "We can't plan classes or class sizes. We can't plan staffing. In order for us to support you, you have to register," she added. Gita said she wants parents to know that staying at home is different than homeschooling and remote learning from home. She said she understands that some parents are feeling frustrated about the district's reopening plans that include 5th through 12th graders participating in all remote learning and kindergarten through 4th grade students choosing either blended learning for 3 hours of in-person instruction during either a morning or an afternoon session, Monday through Friday, or an all-remote learning. "We need these children in school," Gita said. Board member Darlene Halloran pleaded for the district's parents to have patience. "If you have a question, don't go on Facebook," she said. "Call the administrators and go to the source for information." Also on Wednesday, the board approved a plan to refinance the district's debt. Because of the current low interest rate, the district will realize a cost saving of $2.4 million over the remaining 10 years of a 2011 bond it sold to fund the renovations of North Ridge Middle School, Southview Upper Elementary, and Mark Denman Elementary Schools. The board approved issuing general obligation bonds not to exceed $10.5 million for the purpose of refunding the district's outstanding bond from 2011 and levying an annual tax sufficient to pay the principal and interest on them. The bonds will be sold next week, Business Director Narcissus Rankin said. Financing will help to lower the interest amounts the district pays on the bonds, therefore lowering the tax rate levied on the property owners in the district. The refinancing plan will lower the district's tax rate by 0.20 per $100 EVA, the equalized assessment valuation. The bond and interest rate would decline to 0.65 from 0.85 from the 2020 levy, which is payable in 2021. "We're saving the taxpayers $2 million, board member Lon Henderson said. Gita said District 118 was given an A-plus bond rating, which is unheard of in Illinois. The board also reviewed a proposal spending plan for the 2020-2021 school year and approved displaying it publicly for the next 30 days. The tentative budget shows $80.9 million in expenditures for the year, which is about $800,000 more than last year, and $74.9 million in revenue, which is about $1 million less in revenue than the year before. A beginning fund balance of $36.4 million and an ending fund balance of $29.2 million also are projected. The board also appointed Jonathan Rossi, who has been an assistant principal at DHS, as the interim principal at Southwest Elementary School. Last month, the board appointed Southwest Elementary School principal Lindsay Pronkard as the new principal of Southview Upper Elementary School for the 2020-2021 school year. She replaces Mendy Spensbard, who stepped down as Southview's principal earlier in July to return to the classroom at Mead Park Elementary School. Stacy Sollers, an assistant principal at Northridge Middle School, was appointed as interim principal at Garfield Elementary School. She replaces Nicole Zayer, who will oversee the K-4 remote learning program this upcoming school year. Quote, "In the season of COVID-19 and the need for blended learning options, we needed administrators to support staff and students dedicated to the K-4 remote learning program," end quote, Gita said. The assistant principals came from fully remote learning buildings, she added. It was the best use of the staff we have. The board also approved to pay Presidio of Peoria $159,127 to upgrade the district's phone system. The upgrade will allow staff to use their work phone from their laptop regardless of where they are. The upgrade will take 2 to 4 weeks to complete. The district purchased its existing phone system in 2007. The board also heard comments from board member the Reverend Thomas Miller, who said he would like GEDIS to be offered a new 4-year contract. Her contract expired June 30th. Board President Bill Dobble said that although the board has not yet offered GEDIS a new contract, her current contract was automatically extended for a year at the same salary as she has been making. If you're not going to extend a contract, you have to let the superintendent know, he added. Dobble said the end of GEDIS's contract kind of snuck up on us, adding, we still have to work out a salary and length of contract. The board also heard that the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority donated $1,300 to the district to purchase school supplies and 100 K-4 books. The board also heard GEDIS clarify that all students and staff members will be required to wear face masks inside school buildings at all times, according to state guidelines. Our next cover story is also out of Danville. Welcome to DACC. Trustees appoint new vice president. Again, out of Danville. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees welcomed Natalie Page Thursday night as the college's new vice president of academic affairs. Page, dean of academic services at South Suburban College, will start in her new role as DACC's chief academic officer around September 14th. Her contract will run through June 30th, 2021, at an annual salary of $120,000. Paige and her husband, Brian, said the overwhelming hospitality they have been shown while touring Danville has only reinforced that they will enjoy living here. I'm really excited, Paige said. Danville is like a little gem. It's charming. Everyone is super nice and seems so genuine and kind, she added. It's been reassuring and I feel good about this new life chapter. Page replaces Executive Vice President of Instruction and Student Services Dave Kitzman, who retired at the end of June after 50 years with the college. Kathy Sturgeon, who has been Dean of Math, Science, and Health Professions since 2011, served as Interim Vice President for Academic Affairs since July 1. Page was selected from among 50 applicants while doing research on DACC. Page said she felt a real sense of community about the college. I felt that a lot about the programs and the child care center and the traditional and non-traditional students the college serves, she said. I want to add to that sense of community. I want to serve the students and the community. Page said she is eager to continue the good work already in place at DACC and is looking forward to working collaboratively with the faculty and continuing the innovative programs at the college. I want to be innovative and offer those opportunities to the students. I'm also looking forward to meeting the staff and faculty and forming partnerships with the high schools. There is a good foundation here already, and I look forward to learning about the programs that are already in existence. Paige has worked for more than 4 years as the Dean of Academic Services at South Suburban College in South Holland. Her prior experience at South Suburban included 6 years as a tenured faculty member in communications. This followed similar full-time faculty roles at Lewis University in Romeoville and Kennesaw State University in Georgia. Earlier this year, Paige completed her doctorate in community college leadership from Northern Illinois University. Her dissertation focused on improving the success rate of students from underrepresented groups. She also has a master's degree from Governor State University in instructional design and technology. Her bachelor's degree from Michigan State University is in advertising and marketing. My focus is on underserved students and student success. Education is a game changer. It's important we're there and can meet their needs, and community college is where that happens. It can change a student's life, she added. As the Vice President of Academic Affairs at DACC, Paige will lead a team that includes 4 academic divisions as well as online learning assessment and the Hoopston Higher Learning Center. The Pages have 3 adult children. Brian Page works remotely for Shepherd's College in Wisconsin, which serves students with intellectual disabilities. Also Thursday, the trustees approved placing the tentative fiscal year 2021 budget on display for 30 days and set a public hearing on the proposed budget for 5:30 p.m. September 24th in the boardroom at Vermilion Hall, Room 302 at DACC. Although the budget is balanced, it also reflects that the college doesn't expect to receive state funding at 100%. The board also approved an addendum to the agreement with Lakeview College of Nursing. NACO said this is the last year of the agreement. In April 2002, the Lakeview College of Nursing and DAC entered into an agreement in which DAC provides administrative services to Lakeview. The agreement was amended in 2004, 5, 7, 2010, 2012, 15, 18, and 2019 to reflect either increasing or decreasing services. The amendment extends the agreement to June 30th, 2021 and decreases the administrative fee received by DAC to $7,000 retroactive to July 1st. The board also approved the fiscal year 2022 Illinois Community College Board Resource Allotment and Management Plan, which is the college's master plan of capital improvement projects it submits each year to the ICCB. The college storage facility was removed from the latest ramp because the college's purchase last fall of the former Army Reserve Garage will fulfill that need. The Clock Tower Center and ornamental horticultural projects were appropriated last year in the Build Up Illinois Capital Bill and will also no longer be listed in the ramp. A new $5 million project to transform the former Army Reserve Center into DAC's Healthcare Professionals Center was added to the ramp. The board also approved the academic calendars for the next three school years, approved a $3 million capital development board project to renovate the circa 1900 clock tower and ornamental horticulture buildings. DAC will provide a 20% match of $755,267. They also accepted the retirement of Mary Skinner as the Director of Nursing. We'll move now to the obituaries. Out of Williamsport, Indiana, Davis, Marilyn Elaine Bolts Davis, 92, passed away on Wednesday, August 19, 2020, at 5:26 p.m. at Williamsport Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. Private family services were held. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Grady Funeral Home has been entrusted with the arrangements. Dowers. Beverly Ann Dowers, 88, of Southern Pines, passed away on August 9, 2020, at First Health Moore Regional Hospital after a short illness. A memorial service will be held at a later date with burial at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville, Illinois. Bowles Funeral Home of Southern Pines is entrusted with the arrangements. We'll move now to the community briefs out of Danville. United Way Help. In partnership with the United Way of Danville area, any Vermilion County resident struggling to pay housing, utility, or medical expenses can call Marcus Johnson at the Springfield Urbana League for assistance this week. The number is 217-789-0830. No amount is too large. Yoga in Park. Yoga and Mimosas in Palace Park at the Fisher Theater will be from 8 to 9 a.m. Saturday. Registration fee includes yoga, mimosas, and coffee and bakery items. Merritt Spicer will lead you through a yoga routine suitable for all levels. Registration is limited. Yoga mats are available at class. GED test prep. Enrollment for fall high school equivalency GED test prep courses is open at Danville Area Community College. Classes will be held on the DAC campus, online and virtual at the Danville Housing Authority. On-campus classes begin Monday and are held Mondays and Wednesdays From 9 a.m. to noon, a second GED class will be held Tuesdays and Thursdays beginning August 25th from 9 a.m. to noon. Online virtual prep classes begin Monday and is held Monday and Wednesdays from 9 to 10 with mandatory Zoom meetings. Registration and placement testing is held at Prairie Hall from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 to 1 a.m. Friday. Call 443-8782. Our only other local story is in the sports section, Following the Trail out of Danville. After a heat race during his career, Randy Schumann usually leaves the track to get ready for the next race. But this year, he has taken time to sit back and watch a young racer find his way in UMP modified racing, his son, Blaze Schumann. If I am in the first group qualifying and he was in the second group after my run, I told him that my car wouldn't start, so I can see him and watch him qualify, Randy Schumann said. It is almost more fun watching him drive than driving myself. He's so much better than I thought he would be early on. While Blaze Schumann was raised watching his father race all over, it was not until this past winter where he expressed his desire to race. "He's always been on me about learning the cars," Blaze said. "Every now and then he asks me to get in the seat and drive around, and he complains about getting old, so he feels it's time for someone to get his spot. I was always inside playing video games and not much of an outside person. And about 5 years ago, that changed, and now I'm outside more and work on the car, and it's become a passion. We had this backup car, and we were trying to get it together, and he said he wanted to race," Randy said. "I thought it was a joke because I had asked him in the past years. Both my boys said they were happy watching me. Blaze would always help out here and there, but he's committed to doing this." Blaze's first race was in the season opener at Charleston Speedway, and after not qualifying in a heat, he was able to make it by finishing second in the B main feature. "I started eighth, and I had to be in the top four," Blaze said. "I got lucky because I struggled a bit with racing with other cars, so it was interesting, and I didn't expect that outcome." The success of the race at Charleston changed the plans for the young racer in a good way. "I was going to start off racing at one track, and then in the next year we would race in another, but as the time came, we started to go to other tracks," Blaze said. "We have to figure out different speeds, different banking, different dirt, and the way that it packs. It has been interesting all year and has been more fun than I had ever had before." Even before the season started, Blaze was using an iRacing setup to get the feel of a racetrack. "You can set up the cars how you like it, and the best thing is you don't have to pay any more money when you tear it up," Blaze said. "It helps you set up cars with gears and how to set up the engine. I can make more money, and it doesn't have the appeal of racing a real car." Along with the appeal of racing a car on the track, Blaze is also inspired about the prospect of passing his father in a race. It was something that he almost did a few weeks ago at Farmer City Raceway. "I finally got up on him and he shut down on me and I almost passed him on a blown motor," Blaze said. "It was interesting to watch a car that looked like mine in front of me. I tried to go on the high side and he pulled away. I told him since I didn't know that my motor was blown, I just put on the brakes and let him go. I was going to on turns 3 and 4 on the high side, and there he was. I was wondering why the twin cars were there, so I put the accelerator on the floor and cut him off," Randy said. "We have a little joke where if he passes me, he has to move out. It will be a long night the night he actually passes me because I dished a lot of trash talk and I would have to take it for a while. The humor is just part of the relationship between the two." Randy said that while he does give Blaze advice, he does not help working on his son's car. "We do a lot of trash talking during the week and it's never ending, but it is in good spirits," Randy said. "I never gave him any tips because while I learned a lot, veteran drivers develop bad habits and I have not given him one tip. I will not work on his car, so if he's not on it, I am not on it. I go out and try to learn and adapt. It's another job working 60 hours with him and working hours at home," Blaze said. "I am like his little shadow." But even as Randy continues with his season, he is also pleased to hear racers and race fans compliment his son. All I hear from people is about how smooth he drives. If I had a dollar for every compliment I get about him, I wouldn't have to work for a while, Randy said. He's progressing faster than we thought, and he doesn't drive like a first-year driver at all. This is not a beginner's class with the UMP AMODs. It is a pretty big league class, and I told him the best thing you can do in the start is finish a race, and you will get better from there. I told him every night, just return your car to the trailer in one piece, and hold the line, and gain respect, and don't make veterans mad. And he has done great, and our car owner was even amazed with what he has done. Both Schumann's credit car owner Fred Voorhees for the support and hope that the rest of the shortened season will lead to a key off-season to get ready for the next season. We are hoping to finish this year on a strong note because we got him started and I had a little struggle in the middle of the season, Randy said. Over the winter will be interesting. We will try to upgrade his car, but he's having fun and he has not complained about working. There is a guest editorial. Jim Thompson, the last governor to get things done. The state of Illinois may never again see, and probably never before saw, the blend of pragmatism, vision, and political skill that combined to make James R. Big Jim Thompson the state's longest-serving governor. The Chicago suburbs were barely emerging as a political and social force when Thompson was first elected in 1976, but it is not too extreme to stretch a note that they may not have reached today's prominence without his influence. One of the Chicago Republicans' most conspicuous accomplishment in that context was, of course, his work to keep what was then the nation's top retailer, Sears, from leaving the state in 1989 and helping to facilitate the company's historic move to Hoffman Estates. The development not only transformed Hoffman Estates, it also cemented a practice of luring and appeasing businesses with tax incentives and government initiatives that individual suburbs would use for decades to help them thrive. Notably, the Sears deal came as Thompson's career as Illinois governor was winding down. 3 years later, he would leave politics and settle into lucrative private legal practice. But Thompson, who died Friday night at age 84, would leave a legacy of successful deal-making that would arguably mark him as the last Illinois governor who really knew how to get things done in Illinois politics. Succeeding the unremarkable populist Dan Walker, Thompson had a vision of the state that was well-suited to the time. He made the kind of deals that brought a Japanese automaker and thousands of jobs to the state during a period when the loss of manufacturing jobs to Japan was a major national crisis. That helped transform a rundown Navy pier into an entertainment mecca and the state's top tourist destination. That built a $172 million government center in the heart of the Chicago Loop and that kept the White Sox in Chicago. In hindsight, some of these accomplishments are open to question in the context of a world that has changed much in 30 years. But there is no denying the state would be different without them and would likely not have developed as well as it did. Thompson would be followed by a competent successor in Republican Jim Edgar, but even Edgar's steady leadership seemed better suited to keeping the machine of government running rather than fashioning a transformative vision. And Edgar was followed by a succession of chief executives who, at best, struggled to find ways to produce a prosperous economy or instill well-functioning government and, at worst, developed into rank opportunists and corruption. The challenges facing Illinois in 2020 differ from those Thompson faced long ago. Still, it is difficult to imagine a government with him at the helm in which the Speaker of the House or any other elected official would be considered the most influential person in the state government. With Thompson's passing, that's a notion worthy of reflection. Confronting an atmosphere of economic hardship, dysfunctional legislative operations, and an unavoidable health crisis, Governor J.B. Pritzker has shown some promise as a leader in the early years of his tenure, but he is far from proven. It is hard to predict whether he or whoever may succeed him can soon find a strategy to repair Illinois government and put the state back on a path to security and prosperity. That's from the Arlington Heights Daily Herald. We'll go now to the Dear Annie section. Dear Annie, my direct manager recently deleted me on the networking website LinkedIn. I have repeatedly asked him in person and through email why he deleted me, but I received nothing but vague responses from him. I feel a lack of respect over his deleting me, and even more so when he refuses to tell me why he made this decision. We're both adults here. Let's be mature. I was shocked that he removed me from his connections. Should I be concerned about my position at the company? Am I at risk of being fired? Linked out. Dear Linked Out, who knows why your manager deleted you? Everyone has different comfort levels with whom they'd like to connect with online. It doesn't mean your job is in jeopardy, but if you keep pestering him about it, you might fulfill your own prophecy. Dear Annie, I wanted to say that your response to Wondering in Anywhere USA, the person who was wondering whether to correct a friend's PR word mispronunciations, was spot on, because some people may have a speech impediment. It's best to let those mispronunciations slide. Being hard of hearing and having a speech impediment myself, I'll fumble a word here and there, and unless I specifically ask for the correct pronunciation, I expect people to know better than to call it out, as long as they understand what I meant. It's pretty rude to interrupt a person like myself by correcting things I say, because then it can become constant and make one feel insecure. I went through 12 years of speech therapy, and I'm pretty well understood 99% of the time. I hope my friends and acquaintances will please not focus on the 1% of the time. Just let it go. It might be small stuff to them, but small stuff can bother some people in a big way. When in doubt, don't sweat it. From Gabe K. Dear Gabe, I appreciate and agree with your perspective. The following is a complimentary take on the same issue. Dear Annie, I just read the letter and your reply to wondering about correcting mispronounced words. While it's possible that these people had a speech impediment, it's also quite possible that they don't know how to pronounce the words. Having taught English to speakers of other languages for over 20 years, I have plenty of experience with people not knowing how to pronounce words. In my case, my students are often lacking confidence as well as English skills, so I find it important not to further damage that confidence. My strategy is not to call attention to their mistake, but rather to matter-of-factly form a question and response that includes the word, pronounced correctly, of course. In that way, they're able to hear the correct pronunciation without feeling they've been corrected. This is even more important in a group setting, as focusing on the mistake would cause further embarrassment in front of others. They may continue to mispronounce that word, but at least they've heard it correctly, and hopefully they'll eventually get it right. Proud teacher of English to speakers of other languages. Dear proud teacher, indeed, this could be a subtle way to clue someone into a correct pronunciation. Thanks for your expertise and for helping so many students. That brings us to the end of the commercial news for Vermilion County for Friday, August 21st, 2020. This has been Bobby Hardy. Stay safe and stay well.